We're talking now to Roy Dennis. It's too little to say an ornithologist and conservationist. He's arguably the driving force behind the UK's reintroduction agenda. Delighted to welcome Roy to the show. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Bill.
Good to talk to you, and quite a career, and I've got to start, Roy, by firstly saying well done, firstly, and if I had a hat, I would take it off, wearing a hat.
Look, well done for staying alive.
Well, I think a lot of us are saying that at the moment, aren't we? Let's talk about, firstly, your incredible career, and what really inspired you to pursue this career as a field ornithologist and wildlife consultant.
Well, that's, you know, I was one of those lucky country youngsters who could roam the countryside in southern England when I was, you know, 10 years old and just after the Second World War. And we were keen little bird nesters and finding snakes and tadpoles and frogs and everything. And then the Boy Scouts got me into really a more determined bird watching. And I started to keep records. And then when I got to the end of my school career at the grammar school, the only option I had was to go and work in atomic engineering. And I tried it for 2 days and thought, this is not me. And by chance, a bird observatory at Lundy in southwest England said they'd lost their assistant warden had left. Would I come for a few weeks? And I stayed for 4 months.
Well, if that's not fate, then what is, eh? That's incredible.
Well, that's what, you know, it's being known, being very good at what you do, so that people recommend you.
Yeah.
And I then was recommended by the warden at Fair Isle in the Shetland Islands, which was, in those days, was the sort of mecca for the studying of bird migration. And so I had a year there, and then I met a very influential mentor, a famous man called George Horson from Edinburgh, and he that year had protected the first breeding pair of ospreys in Scotland. Mm. And he said to me, would you come and work with me next year with the RSPB? And that's how it all started.
How fantastic. Now, if I'm not wrong, I'm detecting a Hampshire accent from you there, Roy. Whereabouts were your early days?
I was born in the New Forest because it was wartime.
Yep.
And I lived close to the Hamble River.
Lovely.
On the Solent between Fareham and Southampton.
I know it well because when I was at school, my plan was to go to the Hamble College of Air Training to become an airline pilot, and never managed to achieve it.
Well, then my primary school was in Salisbury Green.
Wow, I know it very well, and I also know very well because I did a lot of my growing up there, the Isle of Wight, and that was one of the places that you did one of your projects.
Yes, because when I was probably 15, I started to go to St. Catherine's Point, which is a lighthouse on the south end of the Isle of Wight, looking out over the English Channel.
Beautiful, beautiful.
And we were allowed at that time to go up into that lighthouse at night and go out on the balcony and catch the migrant birds which were attracted to the lights to ring them.
Wow!
And so I was often there, and I remember one time that I went to Culver Cliff on the east of the Isle of Wight.
That's where I lived. I lived there in Sandown. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that cliff was the last breeding site of the white-tailed eagle or sea eagle in southern England. So I went and had a look at it, and that remained in my mind all of these years. And once we were successful with getting enough seagulls breeding in Scotland, we now have 150 pairs, I thought the Isle of Wight and Hampshire would be a great place to restore them.
Yes, how incredible. Well, that cliff played quite a big part in my life because I, like you, was in the Sea Scouts rather than the Scouts, and I was also in the Cliff Rescue Team. And you'd be amazed how many people got stuck trying to climb up Culver Cliff from the ground upwards.
I could imagine it. I could imagine it. And I must say, I went and looked at it 2 years ago, and I was very, very sad to see the number of signs around the top of the cliff.
Yeah.
Asking people to talk to the Samaritans and not throw themselves
absolutely
off.
Yeah, it's a sad, yeah, absolutely. I've been up there many times myself, and it's incredible what people will do, isn't it? But let's talk
anyway,
about
that.
Yeah, more positive things. So the Isle of Wight was the white-tailed eagle reintroductions there, and you're also involved in the South Coast Osprey project as well, right?
Yes. Mm. That one, when I started with the RSPB at Loch Garten in the Highlands, there was one pair.
Mm.
And we put in lots of effort at protecting them and building artificial nests, repairing their nests. So that we now have about 350 pairs in Britain. But in the 1996, explained in my book, we finally got permission to move some down into England, because these birds take a huge amount of time to naturally recolonize.
Yes.
If they've been killed out.
Yes.
And we took them to Rutland Water near Leicester.
Right.
And that has proved very successful, and some of those birds colonize Wales. And then we thought we'd go to the next step, which is to get them into these Hampshire, Devon and Dorset estuaries, which are full of grey mullet. And the old
yes.
Hampshire name of the osprey was the mullet hawk. And so that's the project we're on at the moment.
How fascinating. You have quite an agenda to talk to us about as regards Spain, of course, because the reintroduction of sea eagles to southern Spain and Gibraltar and Mallorca, for a starter.
Yeah, and of course the osprey work. We helped with the osprey. Some of the Scottish ospreys went down to Andalusia.
Brilliant.
For the projects there, both on Barbeti Reservoir.
Reservoir,
which is not far from Malaga, and also in the marshes at ODL.
How amazing.
And then more recently, we helped with another project with Scottish ospreys up in the Basque Country. And the first of those birds are coming back to breed there. But with the white-tailed eagle, we were very close to finally the idea of releasing white-tailed eagles on Gibraltar. And I still think that would be a fantastic idea. They used to be there. They were there when the last of the Neanderthals lived on Gibraltar.
Yeah.
And we also recognize that Mallorca was a very good place.
Okay.
But these projects are extremely difficult to get started.
Well, I'm sure. Tell us about how the kind of the mechanism involved here. I imagine if you're going to release a walking animal back into the wild, then you, I guess, can kind of fence it in and make sure that it stays within its habitat that you've placed it in. But if you just bung a load of eagles somewhere, what's to just stop them flying off?
Well, what you're trying to do is replicate their behavior. And what we know is that especially male ospreys come back to breed very close to where they were hatched.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're doing is mimicking that they think that we are they never see us, but we keep providing food.
Right.
So when they are released, you know, in Basque Country or in Switzerland or in southern England at Poole, they think that that is home. And when they go to Africa and then finally they come back after 2 years, the males in particular will return to where they were released. And then they stop females that are flying by. So, and the same is true of the white-tailed eagles. So we released six white-tailed eagles on the Isle of Wight in 2019, and four are still alive, which is, you know, very good. These birds don't all live. There's lots of problems
yes.
they can come up against. Three of those have had journeys as far north as southern Scotland.
Wow.
And all of them are now back, either in the Isle of Wight or the New Forest.
And you're tracking them with GPS, I guess, these days, are you?
Nowadays, we've got satellite transmitters which tell us where they are every 5 minutes.
How fantastic. Here in Andalusia, Roy, you're a man who would know the answer to this as someone who's returning these things. What is the prevalence of here? I keep asking people, and I call them red kites, and everyone else calls them ospreys. Do you know what the kind of prevalent predator of that nature is here?
There will be a lot of black kites.
Black
kites? And there will be some red kites inland.
Okay.
You know, you've got a big variety of birds of prey. You know, when I've landed in Malaga and headed down into Tarifa and places like that, it's fantastic for that.
The first time I saw eagles soaring here, it was just breathtaking. I had to stop the car.
Well, so breathtaking that some of our eagles have been soaring, you know, north of Portsmouth on the Downs.
Oh, yes.
And they've attracted hang gliders and paragliders to go with them. And the eagles have shown where the thermals are. And one particular guy looked around and an eagle, sea eagle, huge, you know, 10-foot wingspan, was coming up behind him, overtook him, and he followed it and got into the thermal and went up to 2,000 feet with it.
How amazing. That's incredible.
And the other day, last week, one of our eagles made the first crossing of the English Channel from Dungeness to Boulogne. And the hang gliders were just dying to do it because that period, those 2 days, 7th and 8th of April, were the very best days to hang glide to France.
Whoa.
But of course, they would get a £5,000 fine.
That's fantastic. So the eagles don't need a vaccine passport then?
Nothing. That bird is now wandered up and is near Bremen in northern Germany, but we still think that bird will come back.
How amazing that you're able to follow them. How new is that technology? You've been doing this a long time. How new is the satellite and GPS tracking?
Really, 1999, we got the first ones, which were pretty primitive, but really good.
Yeah.
But in the last 3 or 4 years, the ones we're using now don't communicate information to a satellite and send it back. They do it through the mobile phone system.
Okay.
And that gives us the ability to, when we know that an eagle is in some part of England and we want to know what it's doing, we can change the distribution of data from that satellite sitting on the back of the bird.
Wow.
And my colleague can go with his laptop and change it to every 15 minutes. And he can immediately find the bird.
How amazing. And when you're up close to something like a seagull, it must be just an extraordinary experience.
Oh, they're just, you know, they're huge. But I think the dramatic thing is when you see them soaring overhead.
Yeah.
Because they are so big.
Yeah.
And what has really come to the fore during lockdown are the numbers of people sitting in their gardens in urban England and suddenly looking up, and there, 2,000 feet above them, is an eagle. In fact, one of our eagles crossed the Thames at Gunnersby and Kew Gardens the other day. So people looking up would have seen this massive bird going overhead. So there's been tremendous enthusiasm that we can do these things and restore a bird which was completely killed out by humans, you know, 200, 300, 400 years ago.
Amazing. One of the sites that I was absolutely transfixed by here in Andalusia was looking up one day and seeing what looked like a pink blob in the sky, and it turned out to be flamingos, which is just extraordinary.
Yes, superb.
Oh.
I've been at that lovely lake inland.
Yeah.
What is it called? Piedra.
That's it,
seen all the flamingos there. Yes, you're lucky.
Yeah. What about slightly bigger species, things like the lynx, of course, which we have here as well?
Yes, you have the Iberian lynx, which is a smaller one to the one in Northern Europe.
Yeah.
And we used to have that lynx, the northern one. And we've done a lot of you know, studies, and we would love to have that animal back.
Mm.
But there's, you know, you have to get the right politicians in authority to move these projects forward.
Yeah.
And at the present time, we're just not winning on that.
Mm,
we managed to get the beaver back into Scotland.
Right.
But even that, we're not allowed to move them around so that all watercourses had them. So we're being less successful with the big mammals. Although we've done some really good work that I pioneered of restoring red squirrels in areas where they had died out. And that's been very successful.
Wow. And of course you have the Roy Dennis Wildlife Foundation, which people can get involved with.
Yes, you can get on our website and see what we're doing. We are very small. We said at the beginning we would not become a bureaucracy. We don't want to sit in offices. We just want to go out and do things.
Mm.
And so at the moment there's just there's four of us, yeah.
Wow. And is there something that we, the nature-loving public, can do to assist people like you, Roy?
Yeah, you can always, the thing is, you can always look at, you know, interesting kind of stories,
yeah.
And then look at a website,
yeah.
And then maybe say, well, you know, one of the things that people do with us is we get money to run our projects from private people.
Yeah.
And someone might say, I love what you do with eagles, I'd like to sponsor one of the radios.
Ah.
And it's, you know, or we would like to sponsor one of your projects.
Yes.
Or we'll just give you £20 to help you.
Yeah.
So we don't keep a, you know, we don't have members and that, because that takes up a huge amount of organization. And we're great believers. You know, you're better out in the countryside talking to landowners or farmers or foresters and doing things rather than, you know, sitting in an office.
Absolutely. I've seen you speak about opposition to your reintroduction projects. What possibly could people have opposition to?
Well, a lot of it is just fear of the unknown.
Mm.
So, you know, when we wanted to get the eagles on the Isle of Wight, you know, some of the farmers were worried about lambs.
Right.
And they kind of immediately thought about, you know, what might happen and what has been happening in Scotland, because, you know, you can get some pretty scary stories if people don't like eagles.
Mm.
So, in fact, what we did immediately was the weekend after we had our meeting with the farmers, we went to the Netherlands,
mm-hmm.
Where, you know, there's big numbers of sheep there.
Yes.
And pigs and chickens and ducks and everything, and they have about 20 pairs or 15 pairs of white-tailed eagles. And we were able to hear those guys and say, we've never had a problem.
Wow.
And we let those first birds go on the Isle of Wight in August 2019, and we've had no complaints whatsoever. But they're very good at learning to catch mullet and fish in the sea, catching rabbits, and catching particularly injured water birds and, you know, geese that have kind of damaged a wing. Now, people might feel, but that is the point of these big predators, is that they are kind of keeping populations of birds healthy.
Yes.
And ones that are dying or die or dead on the beach or floating in the sea, they will pick up and eat that carrion.
Interesting. Well, it's people like you that just inspire people like me, who love looking at these creatures, and without people like you, Roy, they just simply would be dying out. And so, you know, just thank you for your work and all the people that work with you.
Well, thank you. We're just overwhelmed by how, during lockdown, so many people have thought more about nature.
Yes.
And recognised that, you know, we are part of nature and we've got to look after
it.
And that's been very encouraging.
One of the few positives to come out of it.
Yes, absolutely. Okay.
The book is called Restoring the Wild, 60 Years of Rewilding Our Skies, Woods and Waterways. Thank you so much, Roy Dennis. A pleasure to talk to you today, Roy. You take care of yourself and keep up
thank
the good
you,
work.
Bill.
All bye-bye. The best. Bye-bye.